Looking to stand out from the pack at your first job? When you earn a master's in management from Georgetown, you'll gain the skills employers value most, elevating your career prospects for years to come. Get started at choosegeorgetown.com/MIM.
It's the Smart Driving Cars podcast. Glad you're along for the ride. I'm Fred Fishkin, along with the faculty chair of autonomous vehicle engineering at Princeton University, Alan Kornhauser. Hi, Alan.
Hi, Fred. Good evening.
Good evening. We have a couple of guests joining us in this edition. Sven Zimmerman, Director of Engineering at Bosch, and Richard Bishop of Richard Bishop Consulting. Thanks, Sven and Richard, for being here. Well, first up, Bosch and Daimler AG are partnering on a new autonomous ride-hailing service. They've picked San Jose, and this is scheduled to begin in the second half of next year. Sven, you've been intimately involved with this partnership. Give us the nuts and bolts of what you'll be doing here.
So basically what we're going to do is we are offering a ride-hailing service in the city of San Jose next year. So we will be operating some of our vehicles. It's going to be Mercedes S-Class vehicles. With the technology that we are developing together with Bosch and Mercedes. So basically, we will be operating in a dedicated area in San Jose, and a selected customer group can use an app, call. Basically, our automated vehicles will be picked up and dropped off at certain areas in the city of San Jose.
And have you said how many vehicles yet are going to be involved here?
We're still in the planning phase. We're still evaluating how many vehicles we will be exactly needing. And we're also discussing this with the city of San Jose.
So in the city there, you'll be signing people up for the service. They'll be able to do that, I assume, shortly before at least this starts. And this is going to operate only on specific routes?
Exactly. Basically, how this is going to work, our partner, Daimler Mobility Services, they will have an app where people from the public can sign up to. We'll start with a selected user group and see how big the interest of the service is. And we'll, in the initial phase, we'll completely offer the service for free. And the target for us is to really get direct customer feedback. So we're convinced that we really need to get, when we develop our technology, that we will really need to get feedback from the users directly. So we will ask after every drive, basically what our customers have experienced. And this will then influence our development, of course.
You're planning to have safety drivers on board here. Now, California has given Waymo the green light to begin testing without human drivers in vehicles. How far off might that be for what you and Daimler have planned?
So what we will be doing in 2019 we will work with two safety drivers on board. So we're operating vehicles as of today. We also have an autonomous driver's license since 2014. Both Mercedes and Bosch, even before this partnership. So in the next year, we will be still operating our cars with a safety driver on board.
And you're not saying how far off it might be before you go without that?
So what we're stating at the moment, what we have said is that we will offer our service in the early next decade.
Alan, do you want to jump in here a little bit?
You asked the questions that I would have asked, but I do have a couple. One, are you going to offer any shared ride services?
So in the beginning, we'll offer the service to one or two customers. We will start with single customers and then go from there.
When you say two customers, are they customers that know each other, or like a husband and wife, or is that two independent customers?
We haven't yet determined the details. It really depends on the user group that will be using this service. So that's something that we will figure out when we get there.
So one of the things that that I'm trying to promote, at least here in New Jersey, is to offer these services to the people that really need the service, which is the mobility disadvantaged. To what extent are you going to be looking at providing mobility to the mobility disadvantaged?
Mm-hmm. So we'll be offering the service. We will basically offer the service. We'll start to offer the service basically to the public. Let's see how many people sign up. And then, of course, we have to look at this. We will use S-Class vehicles. We have the back seats available. And then everyone who signed up can use the services.
So San Jose hasn't said, my goodness, if you're providing this mobility service out here, we have these communities that really need the mobility. Will you please go in and serve them? They haven't done that with you.
So we have worked with the city, and they gave us the feedback that basically their citizens have asked for extending mobility services in the cities on certain routes. They have routes that are very well covered by public transportations, and others not yet. And they really have an interest in extending the service that we will be offering and the routes that we will be offering to cover exactly these spots. So also what we got from feedback from many cities is that, you know, it's pretty expensive to install new rail systems or whatsoever. So this is where they really want to learn with us how can automated driving really influence this.
Yeah, and I think the mayor has made some comments saying he sees this as an opportunity to provide mobility to a diverse group of residents,
exactly,
including those with limited options otherwise. So apparently mm-hmm. they are trying to target the kinds of things that Alan has been promoting all along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very good.
Fred, Richard here, I'll jump in with a comment. You know, this is really great to see this happening, and things are certainly ramping up in terms of the car manufacturers deploying in ways like this. Ford has said they'll do it in Washington, D.C. General Motors somewhere. It's not too clear right now. And now the Daimler-Bosch work. And, you know, just I would say just about 3 or so years ago, this was mostly the startups were working it, you know, the Ubers and Waymo, at least at a business level. Certainly the technology has been worked by all of these players for a long time. And then the car makers, there was a pivot somewhere in the last 3 years where, you know, we've got 5 or 6 major OEMs that are now saying, look, our first entry into the market will be with this kind of service that Daimler and Bosch that are talking about. And we'll learn from that. It's a great opportunity. It's a new mobility service, but it's also a way to learn from that for our mass market car somewhere down the road. And it's very synergistic with what will eventually go to the mass market, from what I can see.
Mm-hmm. And the app that's being built for this, Sven, can you tell us anything about that? Is this, I mean, people are familiar, obviously, with Uber and Lyft. Is this going to work in a similar fashion for people who've signed up for this service?
So we're still developing the app, but what you know is our mobility service provider, Daimler Financial Services. They are offering already ride sharing service and car sharing services in the States and also in Europe. Service like Car2Go that you're most likely familiar with. So we will build upon this framework basically.
Sounds like an exciting thing. And this partnership you've had with Daimler, this really started, what, a couple of years ago?
So the specific partnership that we're talking about, we started last year in April, so April 2017, where we decided to join our forces. Both Bosch and Mercedes are working since many years on automated driving technology. When we started actually very, very early after the urban challenge to build up a team here in Silicon Valley. And we started actually from a Bosch side developing on the technology, really on fully automated driving technology 2010-ish. And then we were doing our first public drives on roads in California and in Germany in 2013. So we've been working quite a bit on this topic. The same is true for Mercedes. They also drove, I think it was in 2013, with a vehicle that they called Berta, an S-Class, where they were driving a long stretch in Germany, autonomous. And basically, we decided last year to join our forces and to accelerate our development. We have so many synergies that we just want to combine. And I'm really happy to profit from the know-how that Daimler has. And basically what we do in this partnership is Bosch provides and develops all the components that are required. So radar systems, LiDAR systems, cameras, the actuators like a steering system, brake system that are failed operational, and Mercedes provides the vehicles. And what we jointly do is we jointly develop the algorithms and the software needed for an automated car.
Really interesting, and we really look forward to hearing about what comes next. Obviously, we'll be in touch and hope to have you back on in the future.
Yes, it is very exciting what you're doing.
Thanks. Thanks for sharing that. And it's really an exciting time. It's going to be an exciting future.
You know, as I've characterized these driverless vehicles, they're mobility machines. And as mobility machines, they need to be put out to work. And when they're put out to work, that means they're moving people. And so the key thing is to put them out there to move people and not have them sit in our driveways, as personal entities that we sometimes use, but have them out there as really providing quality of life enhancements to people who desperately need the mobility.
On that, Sven, thanks for taking the time with us.
Thank you. Goodbye, folks.
Well, Richard, we've already heard from you a bit. You're fresh off the 21st annual meeting of the International Task Force on Vehicle Highway Automation in Denmark. And Alan, you're really familiar with what he's been up to.
Richard's been doing a really great job over the past 21 years, putting us on every year, and certainly started it in the very early days of all this, and it is one of the signature events of the year.
Yeah, thanks for saying that, Alan. I think I'm almost certain you were part of the first one, and you've been part of many of these over the years.
Yeah, I wasn't able to make it this year. I mean, sometimes some of us have to teach, you know?
Yeah, right.
You know, whatever.
People have real jobs.
Yeah, real jobs, yeah.
Well,
our first meeting was in 1997, and each year it's a small group, but it's people who are very knowledgeable about the space of automation, and there were a lot of people, even in the 90s, that were knowledgeable, even though most of the world doesn't realize that. And we've continued to track it.
Well, give us an idea of some of the key takeaways from this year's event.
Yeah, we talked about the three main domains out there: the robo-taxi world, which is what Sven was telling us about for Daimler and Bosch. The passenger car mass market world, and the truck side. And the truck side, as in particular, has become extremely active in terms of platooning and as well as individual trucks at high automation. So we covered all of these. I think the most interesting area, and it's a topic near and dear to me, is the sort of the question of, okay, let's assume we've got really great automated cars out there. We haven't transformed society yet, because they can still be stuck in traffic jams just like vehicles today. So how can we get this cooperative process going that allows traffic to flow better? And as you know, Alan, this whole cooperative discussion has been going on a long time. It was really more safety focused with the V2V, V2X. But I'm more focused on the fact that an automated vehicle is powerless to calculate its way out of a traffic jam. Without cooperation, there's no way to improve traffic. And even though this has been kind of a chicken and egg issue over the years, I think there's some new things happening with robo-taxis and ride sharing that could make a difference. So we presented, you know, that concept into the ITF VHA group. We had about 60 people and explored it very, very extensively.
You're in a great position, as Alan is, to talk about how the focus has evolved over a period of years. Things that you're focused on today, you weren't even thinking of a few years back.
Yeah, it's funny. That goes two ways. You know, it's true that we never talked about anything like a robo-taxi service back in the 90s, but the traffic points I was just making, we were talking about that. And it was a major part of the US DOT program that I led at the time, this idea of car platooning to improve traffic flow. And that, you know, I don't think that's necessarily the answer, but there's ways of doing this. So an amazing number of the issues are still the same, but we've got a lot more technology to work with, and we've got investment, and we've got businesses that are agile and ready to really go do something. The traditional automakers are great for what they are. I have no criticism of them, but they aren't motivated as a business to move quickly in the same way the startups do. So the startups have really changed everything.
Yeah, and I think also one of the things you mentioned earlier is the number of the OEMs that are now looking to provide mobility as opposed to sell you a hunk of hardware. And,
right.
You know, Ford, you didn't mention Ford. Ford's, you know, Bill Ford's been on this for some time. And I think it's really important. What ends up being kind of a key for me to really deal with the congestion piece, besides what you can do in terms of orchestrating the traffic flow, is trying to see if we can't possibly get two people in vehicles instead of one person in a vehicle.
Oh, yeah.
Or three certainly. People in a vehicle as opposed to two. It's not putting 50 of them in a bus or something like that. But if you look at, you know, what's happening at the edges of our cities and the suburbs and the inner suburbs, you know, where a great deal of congestion occurs, or in the loop road around Washington, you know, I mean, it's because there's one person in the vehicle. And if somehow, you know, all the orchestration of the offering of the mobility can also be in a way such that we would somehow, which I wish I knew how to do, have people enthusiastically sharing a ride, then, you know, we address the congestion, we address the energy, we address the pollution, we address the affordability. But boy, that's a tough one. But it's really one we're now, yeah, with the algorithms, we might be able to make some headway on that one.
Well, and interestingly, at the ITS World Congress in Copenhagen, at the exhibition, there were several example sort of robo-taxi vans that were, you know, 6 or 8 passenger vehicles. And the one that I saw was from Volkswagen. And, you know, what they're challenged with is trying to make it almost like an airplane seat experience, which people are used to. And we've learned to live with being, you know, seated close to other people and still be in our own space. And so they're really grappling with what does it mean to make this a success, and people will want to be in this vehicle with strangers and not feel too, you know, imposed upon in terms of their personal space. So it's good.
That's really tough. And I don't think any of us know what to do on that one, but right. It really deserves some service. And maybe it doesn't need a 6 or 8, maybe it's, you know, a 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. Just getting 2 is an enormous, 3 is like you're in heaven. You almost don't have to do 6 or 8, but anyway, you know, how to do that. I wish I knew, then I'd become rich.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, a lot of business experimentation, trying to figure that out, and some failure and, you know, all of that stuff. That's what it takes to launch a new service.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things that Sven didn't address at this, in this conversation, but perhaps in the future, is that Mercedes is using an S-Class vehicle instead of something like one of its Sprinters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, Yeah, because I think they're still out there looking for the one percenters or whatever. And but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
I would say there's a completely different reason, which is that in terms of production hardware, the S-Class has got the most intelligence and perceiving the environment and all of that. So it's a great platform to build full automation on top of.
But the Sprinter vehicle is an interesting design, which goes a little bit beyond just the minivan, you know, the that basically Waymo's using. And but anyway, that you know, we're still so darn early in all this. There's going to be a lot of evolution yet.
In the latest Smart Driving Car newsletter, Alan, you highlight a little back and forth you and Richard have had on the subject of truck platooning. Explain what this is all about.
Well, yes, and we have, and I certainly appreciate what Richard has written about it. And Richard, you want to chime in? Go ahead.
I think you had some concerns about the safety of these systems, and I guess really you're more pushing, let's get automatic emergency braking on as many trucks as possible.
I do that in the latest newsletter too. I mean, mm-hmm. I guess. Geez, we've got to get that sucker to work. And you point out very clearly, it's not that they're not doing it. Okay, it's just go ahead. So go.
So the spec on these trucks is so high in terms of safety equipment, production safety equipment like automated emergency braking, that given that the fuel economy benefit is there, it may accelerate the uptake on automatic emergency braking and other things like air disc brakes. So those, as I like to say, and the vendors will say, those trucks are going to be among the safest on the road, whether they're platooning or not.
Right. And I agree with that. And I appreciate, I certainly appreciate what they're doing, because of course it's critical to the quality of life of the poor truckers that are out there. That is such a tough job. And
yeah,
those folks
absolutely
need help, and they need a lot of help. And it'd be nice if they got the help so that it also allowed them to maybe put in an extra hour to better help them also feed their families, and so that they get some additional benefits out of this. So I'm absolutely all for that. So.
And the deployment approach is interesting, because as you pointed out, Alan, if since this requires pairing up, if you can't find somebody to roll along with and connect to, then you've got equipment that you're not getting any value out of. And what's driving the market, at least for the first wave of adoption, is these many, many trucking companies that do a hub-to-hub type of operation, UPS to FedEx. So it's about, maybe 300 miles out, you drop your load, you pick up a new load, you come 300 miles back, and it goes right back to the drivers, because that means they get to be at home at night. And that's changed the way trucking fleets work. Because of the driver shortage, they have to pay more attention to what drivers care about, which is an innately good thing. So there's a lot of that hub to hub, and that means that these trucks are pretty much dispatched together, and so you're getting full usage out of this capability.
Yes, and in those markets, I think it's great. And as you pointed out, to also have on there all the other safety measures, especially the automated emergency braking systems that really do work for them and allow them to operate their trucks properly, but also keep them safe. I mean, those to me, I don't see why there every CEO of a trucking company across the country doesn't say, absolutely, I'm buying these things for my family. I mean, these drivers are part of their family. And in fact, it's also for their bottom line, because most of those trucking companies are self-insured. And guess what happens if there's a crash? That comes right out of the CEO's pocket. And he or she knows how much that's costing them. And when you end up looking at what these things cost, the ROI is so attractive. Absolutely, they should be doing it. So, that's kind of where I'm coming at. And so right. don't have any disagreement on this at all. It is for improvement in the industry. To go on and take the driver out of the truck, I'm not really for that. Eventually, sure, but that's not the initial. Yeah.
And it's, as you're aware, but I want to point out for the listeners, you know, the first generation truck platooning is going to be drivers in both trucks. It's level one. The drivers have a definitive role to monitor the work of the environment and steering. And so it's the longitudinal control that's automated. And, you know, one can certainly speculate, and people have speculated about having a driverless follower and things of that sort. And that's way downstream. So for now, we're going to get this fuel economy benefits to the drivers. And fortunately, the regulatory space is gradually being cleared. There's now 18 states that fully allow commercial truck platooning. Pennsylvania became the 18th just about a month ago, I think it was. And that's expected to go across the country over time. It's just about administrative wheels turning. I'm not aware of any opposition at the state level to truck platooning. So I think we'll have the lower 48 covered.
Yep.
Interesting. Well, Car and Driver reports, Alan, getting to some other headlines on its testing of the latest automatic braking safety systems. And the news isn't very good.
Well, I mean, it's the glass is half full. I mean, it works on some of them and doesn't work on others of them. And again, the problem is the false alarm rate. And of course, the fear that the brakes would be put on when the brakes don't need to be put on. And so that's just in terms of the quality of the sensing system and the algorithms and so on to basically get the false alarm rates down to zero. But I think there's also some elements possibly in the OEMs. The OEMs have been very reluctant to arrest decision making from the driver because my goodness, they give us all these capabilities. And in fact, when they advertise these things to us, it's always they're showing these things operating in closed courses and even suggest, well, you really shouldn't do this, but look, hey, you can go whatever miles an hour. And of course, I always like to show the picture of my speedometer in my car. It shows it can go 160 miles an hour. I always ask the question, holy, where in Jersey am I going to do 160? and so in some sense, they've been selling a dream, but there should be more responsibility to keep us from misbehaving when we're in these things. You know, we shouldn't be tailgating. We shouldn't be speeding. I'm a Pittsburgh Steeler fan, and the Steelers play tonight, and their leading receiver this morning or something was given a ticket for driving at over 100 miles an hour somewhere in Pittsburgh. I mean, come on. How is he allowed how does the Porsche that he's driving not keep him from doing that unless he's at Le Mans or some track where it knows that it's on some track and therefore unlocks it? But there's no, I don't think there's much thought of from the OEMs about doing that.
Of course not. They would lose sales if they did, right? If they did it by individually. So it goes down to government, government activity, government philosophy, as you well know, Alan. So it's a messy space out there.
It is a messy space, but it is somewhat irresponsible of them. Okay. And because they certainly have the technology to put in there to do that, but whatever. And it'd be nice if somehow they were a little bit more responsible.
I
don't know how to achieve that either, except to kind of, chide them every once in a while and to have them get angry at me or whatever. But
so Fred, this is why Alan and I have fun talking, because I think my comeback would be that, well, somebody is being irresponsible. It's either that individual that owns the car, or it's the car maker, or the government. And right. then you get into some very broad philosophical discussions from there.
Well, yeah, I know. But the game starts at 8 o'clock. So, you know.
But I think you both missed the lead on the story. The lead on the story might be that a Pittsburgh law enforcement officer actually gave a ticket to a Pittsburgh Steeler.
Right. come on. I'm not going down that road. Yes. Anyway.
All right. So more stories here. The New York Times ran a report quoting a well-known urban planner saying autonomous vehicles won't fix congestion problems. You've been touching on this just a little bit already tonight.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if it's a self-driving vehicle, you have to have a person in there, you know, with adult supervision. And so, of course, you're going to put on more VMTs and you're not going to do anything about the occupancy. But the robo-taxi or the autonomous taxi, the mobility as a service piece, hopefully, if we do it right, we can move two people at the same time or three people at the same time almost as easily as we can move one person. And there we do have the opportunity to make major improvements in that.
I agree. I can't remember the name of the gentleman that was quoted, the urban planner, but I think he would agree. He's been around a while. He would agree that, yeah, we were talking about this 20 years ago, too. It's just now it's a news headline.
Right.
Then there's the matter of Uber's valuation. A report in Medium calls it insane. Uber received proposals from investment banks that pegged the ride-hailing firm's IPO valuation at $120 billion. So that says Uber's value might be greater than the value of the U.S. airline industry and the car industry if you exclude Tesla.
Well, if I'm an investment bank and I'm, you know, trying to compete to take them public, I'm going to say they're worth $150 billion. And they're probably $200 billion. Give me the job. I mean, I don't know what that number means. It's Goldman Sachs out there, whatever. And I think I told my class, actually yesterday, I told my class I'd give them all A-pluses if in fact, Uber goes out at $120 billion. And they said, really? Oh, my goodness. I don't know.
Of course, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, Medium's right. It's insane.
Yeah. And then, of course, I told them, you know, the candidates that I sent money to on this past election, guess what? They all lost. So, you know, when Kornhauser, you know, picks somebody, he's normally wrong.
Okay. I'll remember to ask you in the future. But, you
know. Well, maybe Uber is going to be worth $120 billion, but Ford is getting to the scooter business and GM is going into the e-bike business. Both are talking about mobility. So what's going on, Alan?
Well, I think, you know, it's as we've been talking about, I think they're realizing that maybe they're mobility providers. And if they are going to be mobility providers, maybe they're going to be providing mobility, you know, across the whole spectrum. And, you know, would they spend $40 million or something like that? It's chump change for them. You got to be in it to win it. So, you know, I think that's why they're doing it. What do you think, Richard?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. I think they're exploring. They have been for the last 2 or 3 years, but they've ramped it up. And as you say, Alan, you know, if it's a bust, if it doesn't go anywhere, it's no big deal for them.
So, right. And they get some talent. They get some people that are involved in startups. You know, one of the problems that the OEMs have had is hiring. You know, hiring people that have that mentality, because, you know, those folks, they either end up going to banks or they end up going to startups or they go to Apple, Amazon, you know, Google and whatever. And, you know, very few of them go to Detroit. And even though all the companies have set up places in Silicon Valley, I'm not so sure, you know, how well they've been able to compete for talent. And, you know, this is a talent search.
That's true. It does help them in hiring.
Interesting, using it as a recruiting tool. Well, that is it for this edition. We want to thank Sven Zimmerman with Bosch and Richard Bishop for joining in Much appreciated, Richard.
You're so welcome. I've enjoyed it.
Richard, great having you. It's wonderful having you, and we'll have you back.
Thanks. That sounds good. I'd love to.
Well, you can find us at smartdrivingcar.com on Google Podcasts, Apple, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Spreaker, and more on Alexa, too. You can find my tech reports at textination.com. I'm Fred Fishkin along with Alan Kornhauser. Thanks for listening.
Go Stillers.
Now is the chance to use reliable energy to grow your money with the Dominion Energy Reliability Investment. Our new investment product offers competitive returns, no maintenance fees, and flexible online access to your money. Make the reliable investment in reliable energy. The Dominion Energy Reliability Investment. To find out more, go online to reliabilityinvestment.com. That's reliabilityinvestment.com.